Is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Deborah Love for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles for you from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. Our first article is about spinal stenosis and what we can do about it. Paying for parking brings unexpected difficulty these days. When you fish in your pocket for spare change, you can't tell what's a quarter and what's a dime. Buttoning shirts also brings frustration, as your fingers don't work like they used to. These motor skill issues come with occasional feelings of numbness and tingling in your back and down your arms and legs. All of these symptoms might be explained by spinal stenosis, spinal cord concerns related to a form of spinal stenosis. Cervical spinal stenosis occurs in the neck and affects about 5% of adults over 50 years old. It's a leading cause of spinal cord damage, also called myelopathy. A related condition called lumbar spinal stenosis is more common and occurs in the lower back. Wherever it occurs, spinal stenosis most often results from wear and tear over time. In fact, by age 50, most people have at least some signs of age-related deterioration in their spines. Sometimes these changes can put pressure on the spinal cord and nerves. For severe spinal stenosis, your healthcare team may recommend surgery. However, conservative non-surgical treatments typically are used first to help ease symptoms. Deterioration in the body's scaffolding. Your spine is the centerpiece of your back. In addition to supporting the weight of your upper body, it protects your spinal cord and nerves, which carry signals that control your body's movements and convey its sensations. The bones that make up your spine are called vertebrae. These bones are stacked on top of one another, creating a channel called the spinal canal. This canal surrounds your spinal cord. Other essential parts include muscles and ligaments that support and stabilize your spine, facet joints that help with movement, and discs that sit between the vertebrae to cushion the bones. Different conditions can reduce the amount of space within the spine, leading to spinal stenosis. The most common are age-related. The first of these is osteoarthritis. With this form of arthritis, the cartilage that cushions the ends of the bones in the joints wears away. When osteoarthritis occurs in the spine, the spaces between the vertebrae narrow, bone surfaces rub together, and facet joints and areas around the cartilage become inflamed and painful. This can lead to bony growths called bone spurs, which can narrow the spinal canal. Another age-related condition is disc degeneration. With age, the discs that act as cushions between your vertebrae can flatten and bulge. Eventually, the tough outer covering of the disc may develop tiny tears. This can cause the jelly-like substance in the disc center to protrude and press on your spinal cord and nerve roots. Thirdly, there are thickened ligaments. The tough cords that help hold the bones of your spine together can become stiff and thick. This can decrease the space within the spinal canal and irritate spinal nerves. So, the symptoms for this often differ by location. The neck and lower back are the most common parts of the spine affected by spinal stenosis. Spinal stenosis in the neck can cause clumsiness and lack of fine movements, especially in the fingers. It can cause pain or stiffness in the neck or shoulder, as well as numbness, weakness, or tingling in a leg, foot, arm, or hand. It can also lead to imbalance when walking. When severe, it may affect nerves to the bladder or bowel and cause incontinence. Spinal stenosis in the lower spine, called lumbar spinal stenosis, is much more common, affecting up to 50% of people over age 50. There may or may not be any lower back pain, but you may feel pain or cramping in your legs, especially when you walk or stand for long periods of time. These sensations often are relieved by sitting down or walking slightly bent forward, such as with a shopping cart. Numbness or tingling in the legs or buttocks also may occur. Later on, weakness can develop in one or both legs. Some people may experience foot drop, a problem in which the foot slaps the ground while walking. Severe lumbar spinal stenosis can also cause changes in bowel and bladder function. So let's look at the tests and symptoms that guide the diagnosis. Symptoms of spinal stenosis may be noted when your healthcare team takes your medical history and conducts a physical exam. Other tests often are needed to confirm a diagnosis and rule out other conditions. These tests may include 1. Spinal x-rays. This type of imaging allows your care team to view bones and other bony structures in your body. X-rays can reveal bone spurs or other age-related changes in your vertebrae, as well as other issues such as fractures. Secondly, there's magnetic resonance imaging, or MRI. An MRI often is the imaging test of choice for diagnosing spinal stenosis. An MRI uses a powerful magnet and radio waves to produce cross-sectional images of your spine that show the soft tissues. This can help reveal specifically where you have damage to your discs and ligaments and show places of pressure on your spinal cord nerves. Thirdly, there's computerized tomography, or CT myelogram. CT combines X-ray images taken from many different angles to produce detailed cross-sectional images of your body. With a CT myelogram, a CT scan takes place after a contrast dye is injected into your spinal column. This outlines your spinal cord and nerves and can show whether you have herniated discs, bone spurs, or tumors. Lastly, there's an electric myography, or EMG. This diagnostic procedure tests the health of the muscles and nerve cells that control them, motor neurons. EMG results can reveal the changes in muscle or nerve function or problems with nerve-to-muscle signal transmission. EMG is used to check whether specific nerve roots are being compressed. It may show whether any other conditions, such as peripheral neuropathy, are contributing to symptoms. So let's look at some of the treatment options. Non-surgical treatment almost always is the first line of treatment for spinal stenosis, whether the stenosis is occurring in your neck or back. Your healthcare team likely will recommend one or more options, including exercise and physical therapy. Exercises can be used to strengthen your abdominal and back muscles. Keeping active also helps maintain the flexibility and stability of your spine. Some physical activity treatments, including heat and ice, may also help pain, ease pain, and allow you to stay or become more active. Then there are medications. Acetaminophen, which is known as Tylenol and other such drugs, or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, such as ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin IV, and others. or naproxen sodium, known as Aleve and others like it, can help relieve pain. Some studies have shown that certain antidepressants, such as amitriptyline or duloxetine, and anti-seizure drugs such as gabapentin, known as Neurontin, or pregabalin, known as Lyrica, may also reduce pain associated with spinal stenosis. If conservative measures fail to ease pain that's severe enough to limit your daily living, your care team may recommend surgery. This is especially true if an MRI and your symptoms suggest that there's damage to the spinal cord. Surgery also is considered when complications develop. These include severe weakness or loss of bladder and bowel control. The purpose of surgery is to relieve pressure on your spinal cord or nerves. The most common procedure, called laminectomy, removes the back portion or lamina of one or more vertebrae to create more space within your spine. Sometimes vertebrae may be fused to maintain the spine's strength. Most often, surgery helps reduce pain and improve function. However, if nerves were badly damaged before surgery, there may be remaining pain or numbness or sometimes no improvement. Surgery also comes with risks. The most common complication of spinal stenosis surgery is a tear in the membrane that covers the spinal cord. Infection and blood clots also can occur. The presence of other health issues can complicate surgery as well and affect whether you're a good candidate for a procedure. That's a sobering article. Our next article comes from the second opinion section where they do some Q&A. And the reader question that was submitted was, I have had anal itching for a few months. It's an embarrassing topic, and I'm reluctant to bring up. Do you have any self-care tips? The answer, yes. There are things you can do to help relieve or cure this condition, known as pruritus ani or anal itch. Best described as an intense itching inside and around the opening of the anus, it tends to more commonly affect older adults and men of all ages. Anal itching has many possible causes. These may include dry skin, infections, abrasions from clothing or from wiping too hard or too often, sweating, sticky stools, frequent diarrhea, or fecal incontinence. Rare but more serious, cancer occasionally can cause these symptoms. Experts believe that diet contributes to the condition, with some evidence that it's worse when diets have more coffee, tea, carbonated drinks, tomatoes, and citrus fruits. Eating a diet high in fiber can help promote regular passing of stool. When no specific cause is found, self-care steps successfully eliminate itching about 90% of the time. For relief, take a sitz bath twice daily by sitting for several minutes in about 3 inches of warm water. Also, gently clean the area with water and a mild, fragrance-free soap after you pass stool. This may involve taking a quick shower or using a soft washcloth or squeeze bottle. Don't scrub and avoid using moist towelettes or wipes, abrasive cloths, or moist toilet paper. Make sure toilet paper is scent-free and dye-free, as chemicals can worsen itch. After sitz baths and cleansing, pat the area dry with a cloth or use a hairdryer on the fan-only setting. Using heat could further irritate this delicate area. They also suggest that you wear relatively loose-fitting cotton underwear to keep the area cool and dry. Apply zinc oxide or petroleum jelly to the anal area to provide a moisture barrier. If the itch is persistent, a cream of non-prescription 1% hydrocortisone applied 2 to 3 times a day can be used for a week or two. And finally, avoid scratching to minimize further irritation. It may help to wear cotton gloves to bed so that you don't knowingly scratch while sleeping. Usually, self-care works, but if the problem is severe or prolonged, an evaluation by your healthcare team may be necessary. This next article is about a more serious condition known as Crohn's disease. Diarrhea, cramping, and fatigue may sound like symptoms of a simple stomach bug, but if they don't go away, or if they come with issues such as night sweats, joint pain, or mouth sores, they may point to a condition more serious underlying. For more than a million people in the U.S., that condition is Crohn's disease. Crohn's disease is a type of inflammatory bowel disease known as IBD. That means it causes long-lasting inflammation in the digestive tract, most common at the end of the small intestine and the beginning of the large intestine. While the disease is long-lasting, its symptoms may not be constant. For many people, symptoms come and go with periods of calm called remission in between. The severity and location of the disease can vary from person to person. Symptoms of Crohn's disease differ depending on where the inflammation occurs and how severe it is. Common symptoms include diarrhea, fever, fatigue, abdominal pain and cramping, blood in the stool, mouth sores, reduced appetite and weight loss, pain or drainage near or around the anus. Crohn's can also cause complications outside the GI tract. These may include joint pain and arthritis, eye inflammation, and skin bumps or rashes. Liver or bile duct conditions, inflammation involving the blood vessels, known as vasculitis, kidney stones, and iron deficiency anemia are also possible. In addition, Crohn's disease can lead to serious intestinal complications due to scarring and narrowing of the intestines or the development of ulcers along the digestive tract. One such complication is bowel obstruction. Another is when ulcers extend through the intestinal wall and create connections that shouldn't be there, such as between the intestine and the skin, or between the intestine and another organ. These are called fistulas. Over time, Crohn's may contribute to osteoporosis, liver disease, eye conditions, and blood clots. The disease and its treatments may also increase your risk of certain cancers, including colorectal cancer. That's why routine screenings and ongoing medical care are essential. So, who's at risk for Crohn's? Crohn's disease can develop at any age, but it's most often diagnosed in young adulthood. Several factors increase the risk. These include having a family history of the disease and being of Eastern European Jewish or Ashkenazi descent. Tobacco use is the most controllable risk factor. Smoking can increase your likelihood of developing the disease and worsen its course. Scientists believe that imbalances in the mix of good and bad bacteria in the digestive system and an impaired immune system may also play a role. Diagnosing Crohn's can be challenging, as its symptoms often resemble those of other digestive conditions. Doctors typically use a combination of tools to confirm the diagnosis. These may include a physical exam and discussion of your symptoms, blood tests to detect anemia, inflammation, or infection, stool tests to check for blood, infection-causing organisms, or calprotectin, a protein released by white blood cells when there is inflammation in the intestines, imaging studies such as CT scans or MRIs to assess inflammation, narrowing of the bowel, stricture, known as strictures, or pockets of pus where there is infection, known as abscesses. Endoscopy, a procedure that uses a thin, flexible tube with a camera to look inside the digestive tract. A related option is capsule endoscopy, which includes swallowing a capsule containing a tiny camera. The camera transmits pictures from inside the digestive tract. Let's take a look at medications and other treatments. And I am going to ask you to bear with me here because these are some of the most complex drugs that I've had the privilege of reading about. So, the goal of drug therapy for Crohn's disease is to achieve and maintain remission. While medications can help manage your disease, none offers a cure. Medication for Crohn's disease include corticosteroids. Corticosteroids, including prednisone and budesonide, are often used to manage flare-ups because they act quickly to reduce inflammation. Due to potential side effects such as bone loss, high blood pressure, and high blood sugar, these medications are recommended only for short-term use. Then there are immunosuppressant medications. Drugs such as methotrexate, azathioprine, and mercaptopurine are used to keep the disease in remission after corticosteroids are stopped. There are also a number of biologics. These medicines target specific immune proteins that drive inflammation. They are typically given by injection or IV infusion. Drugs that block tumor necrosis factor, known as TNF, are known as TNF inhibitors. These include infliximab, known as Remicade, adalimumab, known as Humira, and certolizumab pegol, known as Cimzia. Other biologics include natalizumab, known as Tysabri, and vedolizumab, known as Entyvio, which stop immune cells from reaching the gut lining, and ustekumab, known as Stelara, risankizumab, known as Skyrizi, and mirikizumab, known as Omvoh, which target interleukins. Nearly identical versions of these drugs, known as biosimilars, may be more affordable. And lastly, there are Janus kinase inhibitors, known as JAK inhibitors. These newer oral medications, known as small molecules, reduce inflammation by targeting parts of the immune system. They may be used when other options haven't worked. The Food and Drug Administration has approved upadacitinib, or Rinvoq, for Crohn's disease. I am sorry, that's a tough one. Rinvoq is much easier. Other medicines include antibiotics to help treat fistulas and abscesses, fiber supplements such as psyllium, known as Metamucil, or methylcellulose, known as Citracell, oloperamide, known as Imodium AD for diarrhea, and specific vitamins or supplements to help with nutrient absorption. For pain, acetaminophen, known as Tylenol and by other names, is probably a better choice over non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or NSAIDs, such as ibuprofen or naproxen sodium. That's because NSAIDs may irritate your bowel and worsen symptoms. So let's look at nutrition and diet. There's no special Crohn's diet that helps everyone, but many people identify specific foods that trigger symptoms. A registered dietitian can help to create a tailored plan to maintain good nutrition and avoid flares. You may find you benefit from a low-fiber diet during flare-ups, a lactose-free diet if you can't tolerate dairy products, a diet low in spicy, greasy, or highly processed foods. Tube feeding of a liquid-only diet may be used to reduce inflammation. Called enteral nutrition, This approach may promote healing without the side effects of corticosteroids. So let's look at surgery. If diet and medications don't control your symptoms or complications arise, your healthcare team may suggest surgery. About half of people with Crohn's disease need surgery at some point, though it doesn't cure the condition. Surgery typically involves removing the damaged part of the digestive tract and reconnecting the healthy sections. It may also be used to close fistulas or drain abscesses. Mental health and support is also needed. Crohn's disease affects your emotional well-being as much as it affects your physical health. People with IBD are more likely to experience anxiety and depression. This is often due to the uncertainty of flare-ups, demands of chronic illness, or body image concerns. Support groups, therapy, mindfulness techniques, and often an open communication with loved ones can help manage these emotional challenges. Although Crohn's is a lifelong condition, many people manage their disease effectively and lead full, active lives. Advances in treatment and a deeper understanding of the disease continue to improve outlook and quality of life. Our last article today is some advice from the Mayo Clinic about lowering drug costs. The cost of prescription drugs is a common concern. Nearly one in four people aged 65 and older report they can't afford their medicines. But some research and some questions can help you pay less when putting your health without putting your health at risk. So the first piece of advice, go generic. Ask your healthcare team to prescribe a generic drug. Generics have the same active ingredients and work as well as brand name drugs, but cost less. Secondly, there's researching financial assistance. Several charitable organizations, drug companies, and pharmacies offer financial assistance. Visit www.rxassist.org. That's rxassist.org to access a database of programs that offer free and low-cost medicine help. Thirdly, compare Medicare plans. Compare prescription drug plans online with the Medicare Plan Finder or a state health insurance assistance program known as SHIP, S-H-I-P. During open enrollment, you can switch your plan for the next year. Also, adults with limited income may be eligible for an additional Medicare Part D program called Extra Help. Another possible way to control costs is to bulk up. Ask your insurance provider or pharmacy if your plan allows you to fill a larger supply, such as 3 months instead of 1 month, to save on fewer copays. If you're starting a new prescription, your healthcare team may want to prescribe a smaller quantity and monitor how well you can tolerate the drug. After this initial period, you may be able to get a prescription for a larger quantity. Also, ask if there's a higher strength pill that you can safely split. Know your options. Ask your prescription insurer for a list of covered formulary medications to share with your care team. Well, we've run out of time for today. This is Deborah Love reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues.